Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is The Art of Being Well. What's up, and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine doctor. I get to consult people around the world via webcam, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting, The Inflammation Spectrum, Ketotarian, and the newest book is called Gut Feelings. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, the telehealth center, we actually have brand new telehealth patient options now open and lots of free resources there for you as well. It all is at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners of The Art of Being Well, every single month, no matter when you listen to this episode, my team and I are going to pick winners to send a signed book right to you. All you have to do for a chance to win is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the show. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or you can take a screenshot of your Apple Podcast review and message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole. And then every single month, my team and I will be going through the Instagram messages and going through the Apple Podcast reviews themselves and picking winners from both every single month. I'll reach out to you. We'll ask which book you want me to sign, and then we'll send it out to you. All right, good luck. Let's get to today's guest. He is a brilliant human being. His name is Luke Story. Luke is a writer, meditation and metaphysics teacher, and lifestyle design expert who shares transformative principles on health, addiction, recovery, and spirituality. He's the host of the top-rated The Lifestylist podcast, which he launched in 2016. Luke spent the past two decades refining the ultimate wellness lifestyle. His teachings combine primal health and ancient spiritual practices with the most cutting-edge natural healing and consciousness-expanding technologies. In short, Luke is a pioneer in all things health and wellness. He honestly is a pioneer in the whole concept of biohacking. I mean, he was biohacking before biohacking was even a thing, and he really was. He's a large part of why it's even a conversation today, if you didn't know that. This is the man behind all of these innovations and conversations, and he was talking about it way before anybody else was. Anyways, you're going to learn so much from him in today's conversation, so let's get right to it. This is Luke Story's Art of Being Well.
My friend, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
I'm stoked to talk to you.
This is great. So I know a little bit about, well, I guess before we talk about this, we're going to jump into all this stuff, but I have to just acknowledge where I'm at right now. I'm in your beautiful home in Texas. We're in your ceremony. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, the ceremony room.
Ceremony room.
The loft for short, because it technically is a loft.
I think it's, I immediately walked in and I just felt like, oh, it's just like the best place to have a conversation on it for a podcast, especially when you're walking into someone's space. You kind of like, all right, what's the vibe going to be? What's it going to be like? Especially when there's cameras and equipment, and it can feel kind of artificial when I'm used to just connecting to people on a more like private basis with patients. So tell me about this room. I want to know about it.
Well, you know, it's funny. This is not going to be my permanent studio. We have to build it somehow and find space for it in here.
Yeah.
But it's funny because when I record podcasts, whether we do it here and I'm the guest in this case, or I have people on as you were on my show, they're really the kind of conversations I like to have. And so when we were trying to find a place in the house that would be suitable to record and film podcasts, I thought, well, where do I have the most meaningful conversations when we have guests? And it's sitting in these two chairs just like we are. When we bought this house, this space was, they kind of used it as a flex room, right? There was just, random furniture. It didn't appear to have any real purpose, but mm-hmm. we knew right when we walked in here, man, if we get this place, this is going to be our ceremony room, which to us could mean a number of different things. Typically, this is where I'll do my morning breath work, and we often meditate together, my wife Allison and I. This is where we play music. You see guitars and drums around and stuff. So mm-hmm. this is kind of the music room. And all of the furniture is kind of low profile, so it's very loungy, and there's all these Moroccan and Turkish rugs, and it's just cozy up here. Mm-hmm. And it's the most spacious feeling because it's on the second floor, and for those that can't see over the edge here,
yeah.
You know, it overlooks kind of the open space of the house. So it's like our little tree fort, you know.
Yeah.
And I envision getting many more plants. We just got this furniture recently and just putting tons of plants up here and just having it be a little jungle atrium full of oddities from around the world. And that area over there is really my wife's altar. She's a shaman, and so she does all kinds of strange things over there. I don't know exactly what she's doing, but there's burning of things and prayers and animal feathers and all kinds of rattles happening. And you know, that's where she does her, you know, her practices
yeah.
and stuff together, but also on her own.
Yeah.
So I think the energy of this room is conducive to having meaningful conversations.
It is. I feel it energetically. And I'll definitely have your wife on separately to talk all about her work, because I'm fascinated by that. So stay tuned, everybody, to listen to this. But I want to jump into, I know a little bit about your story of just going through drugs, addiction, and like finding your path to wellness. But people don't know, not everybody knows your story. What was going on then? Take me back to that time and what led you to where you're at today.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Will, because being a person, I mean, I don't closely identify myself as like, I'm in recovery, I'm a sober person, but for all intents and purposes, yeah, I'm free of the addictions that used to really plague me. But part of that journey that I'm sort of coming full circle to now is, and I will answer the question going back to kind of how it started, but where I am now and why I'm more enthusiastic about talking about it, not that I was ever not willing to talk about it, but there's a self-identification phase, at least in my case, of an alcoholic, an addict that gets sober. Mm-hmm. And because you're clinging to your very existence, which was the case for me because I was terribly addicted and extremely ill in so many ways, that you really become identified as someone like, I'm a sober person, right? Like, how long you been sober? I'm 2 years, I'm 5 years, I'm 10 years. And part of the 12-step mod on all of that is really based around that being your tether to your survival, right? And so there was a long period of time where so much of my life was focused on recovery and all the various recovery programs and things I was doing to heal spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically. And then at a certain point, I saw that I had become, not in a negative way, but just I was expanding, right? I was becoming more dynamic and just spreading my wings. And then I found it to be kind of just, maybe I was tired of talking about it, but also somewhat of a limiting self-identity as like, oh, I'm a former addict and that's kind of my backstory. And so I just kind of left it alone and I moved on to different things and didn't spend a lot of time speaking about it. But recently, I think I'm now 25 years into this journey. I got sober when I was 26. I'm seeing that there are many people still suffering, particularly with addiction, especially in the era of the past 3 years that we've gone through, right? And so I've kind of discounted the value that I have to contribute from that perspective of really going through the trenches of addiction and finding my way out, and not only finding my way out, but creating a life that is thriving and helping so many people through the work that I do, mm-hmm. hopefully at least, you know, that's the feedback I get. So now I'm kind of having a full circle moment where I'm going, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't have discounted my experience so much, and I think that I could have the opportunity to be of service by delving into that a little bit more, because it's one of those things when you get out of it, and at least in my case, you surround yourself with other people that share that plight, right? And you support one another. I mean, that's the value in the 12-step model, so much in community and the unconditional love and support and spending your time with people that have been where you've been and they really understand you in ways that people that have not had that experience can't understand. There's a camaraderie there. There's a bond there that's palpable. It's real and it's so supportive. But then as you become more independent and mature, and that just becomes kind of part of who you are, you're someone who's not addicted to drugs anymore and has hopefully some sort of spiritual relationship to your life, you kind of forget about the other people that are still out there suffering. It's this self-referential point of view. And you think, well, when I got sober, I thought everyone did. I remember being shocked, right? I'd go to a concert or something and everyone's smoking weed. I'm like, what? People still do this? You know,
is that a self?
Yeah, because you're also, you know, it's one of the attributes to many addicts. It was in my case is being very self-centered, right? Because you have to be that way in order to survive and maintain that kind of lifestyle when you're in active addiction. So over the years, you know, I just kind of developed this point of view that we don't need to talk about that anymore. I've overcome that and there's not a lot of value in it. So anyway, I'm finding value in it now. And also just reinvigorating my appreciation by acknowledging that. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I was actually having a ceremony of sorts here with my wife, and we were just having a really heart-centered conversation. And it was just the way that she said it in the moment. It's like we were, I get emotional sometimes talking about it because I have so much gratitude for my life and who I've become.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had moved in this house some time ago and we had worked really hard to make it a home, you know, and she looked at me and she said, God, Luke, just look how far you've come.
Yes.
Look what you've accomplished. Like, look at how you've changed, how you've evolved. And I'm always just kind of looking at the next thing, right? Still kind of, you know, I'm eating too much sugar. I'm still chewing the nicotine gum. You know, there's always kind of the next hurdle that I think I need to overcome, you know? Right. And it was a really profound moment of just going, wow. For some reason, I had objectivity in that moment because it was being reflected by someone that I know and trust and love. And it was just like, holy shit, wow, I really have lived some life.
Yeah.
And there is an immense amount of earned wisdom in that, you know, and so it's something
that's
kind of
beautiful.
Leaning back into now. But I mean, for me, it's, I think, kind of a typical, at least based on my experience and hearing the experience of those that share my life journey. You know, I experienced a lot of trauma when I was a kid and, you know, divorced parents and just sexual abuse and just a family lineage of God bless them all. And I love them all and have so much compassion for, you know, my parents and all of my caregivers, but our family lines on both sides have a long history of alcoholism and trauma and just dysfunction and just craziness, you know? Mm-hmm. And many of us have now turned the corner, my parents included, my brothers, and we're on a path and all is well, but you know, that's where I came out of. And it was also, I grew up in the 70s in the Bay Area. And there were a lot of drugs in the Bay Area. You know, at the end of the 60s, the Haight-Ashbury movement kind of fizzled out as hard drugs infiltrated the psychedelic movement. And a lot of the hippies kind of moved into the more remote areas, which is where I lived. And so there were a lot of biker gangs and, you know, just kind of ex-hippies. There were a lot of drugs. So you have a kid who's experiencing a lot of trauma. There's no way to hold that or process that. No one knows what trauma is. No one even knew about most of the trauma I experienced because I shamefully kept it hidden and didn't disclose it. And so you have the perfect storm of traumatized, confused, alone kid that has access to a lot of drugs. And so I became addicted to drugs at a really young age and moved to Hollywood when I was 19. And just, you know, that's when I, you know, they really took the limits off because I had no supervision at all at that point, you know, and I actually had a really good time for a little bit. I was playing music. I was in bands and, you know, wanted to be a rock star and all that stuff that drives many of us from the country or suburbs into Hollywood. And essentially by the time I was 26, I just had completely destroyed what little life I had and just hit a moment of just a classic, what I call a subterranean bottom. You know, it's like if you're an addict, you hit bottom, right? And there's, you lose your job, there's a divorce, you get in an accident, you get arrested, you get beat up, things like that happen. And, you know, they happen in succession, that type of thing, you know? And I just think, okay, this time I'm going to turn it around. And I just never could, you know? And I just finally reached a point where I conceded to my innermost self that I could not help myself, that my willpower was absolutely useless.
Wow.
And I was trapped, and I was in an immense amount of pain, and I was just suffering on an ongoing basis and had so much chaos and drama in my life. I mean, it was just like such a miserable existence because I have this underlying trauma that I'm not even aware of as being the issue, right?
Yeah.
And I'm seeing my life and the consequences of my drug use and alcohol. I mean, just throw it all in there at once. I was addicted to pretty much every drug you can imagine, like physically addicted and all the things. And it always seemed like the drugs are the problem because that's kind of the catalyst for all of the drama. And then the real rude awakening for me was when I finally succumbed to the fact that I couldn't help myself and I checked into rehab and became deeply committed to a recovery program, that that's when all of the emotional trauma and all of the dysfunction really came to the surface because I was unable to anesthetize myself, essentially, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't drink it or snort it or smoke it away.
Yeah.
And thus began, you know, my spiritual journey and also the journey of physical healing and getting into what now, I can't stand the word biohacking because I think of the body as a beautiful, holistic, living being and not something that should or needs to be hacked.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of a better term. Yeah. And that's what people know now. But, you know, I got into detoxing and saunas and, like we were speaking about earlier, making kombucha and fasting.
The SCOBY.
All the late 90s kind of health, you know, alternative health stuff. And I started just on that path. And now it's been, you know, 25 years of just being deeply committed to being as whole and healthy as I can. And in the past few years, I've been able to turn that into, you know, a business of sorts and make my living doing essentially what I would be doing anyway, what I was doing for the first 20 years. You know? And then I had my day jobs in Hollywood and did all kinds of interesting creative things. But I'm committed to my spiritual evolution. And in order to do that, one also, in my experience, has to have the vitality and energy to do it.
Right. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Now get 20% off every IQBar product plus free shipping when you text ABW to 64,000. One of the top questions that I get asked on social media, as well as from new telehealth patients, they want to know, what are my go-to snacks? Like easy, delicious, convenient snacks on the go that taste good, but also love you back, that are good for you. One brand that I love in this category is something called IQ Bar. You have to check this out. IQ Bar, it's super diet friendly no matter how you eat. If you're vegan, paleo, keto, gluten-free, soy-free, GMO-free, IQ Bar checks all the boxes. IQ Bar is the only bar optimized for your brain and your body. It's packed with brain nutrients, plant protein, and fiber, all with next to no sugar or net carbs. Plus, it has a super clean label, and it's freaking delicious. IQ Bar is great for your brain. It's formulated with 6 key nutrients shown to support cognitive energy, performance, and health. No more midday slump. IQ Bar is a delicious crash-free breakfast or afternoon snack that'll help you win your day. It also is great for your body because it's packed with plant protein for strong muscles, sustained blood sugar throughout the day, prebiotic fiber for a happy, healthy gut, and healthy fats for clean, crash-free energy. IQ Bar comes in 7 mouth-watering flavors like toasted coconut chip, almond butter chip, peanut butter chip, you know, I love that one the best, and banana nut. You won't believe how good these things taste, especially considering they have next to no sugar or net carbs. IQ Bar is the number one brain and body protein bar in the United States with over 10,000 5-star reviews and hundreds of thousands of happy customers. Now get 20% off all IQ Bar products. Plus, get free shipping. To get your 20% off right now, just text ABW to 64,000. Get your discount. Text ABW to 64,000. That's ABW to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See term for details. As a functional medicine doctor, part of my job, especially for people that are dealing with hormonal problems and they're struggling with things like low sex drive or painful, uncomfortable sex, it's supporting their hormonal balance from the inside out. But part of that is also supporting their health from the outside in. A product line that I love for sexual wellness, anybody that's struggling with uncomfortable sex, painful sex, or just looking to elevate and enhance their sex life, is something called Foria. You have to check this out. Foria is here to help you have really healthy sex and more of it. They create award-winning products to support intimate experiences across every stage of your life, from menstruation to menopause. Foria's Sex and Intimacy Collection features life-changing plant-based formulas designed to enhance pleasure and open the door for better, healthier sex. Whether you're looking to spice up your relationship or give the gift of pleasure to a friend or a loved one, Foria's unique formulas are for everybody. Made with liquid coconut oil for long-lasting moisture and 400 milligrams of CBD for enhanced relaxation. Foria fans love their sex oil because it's clean, it's silky but never sticky, and safe for sensitive skin and sensitive parts. I recommend trying all their best sellers. You can get what they call the Quickie Kit. That's a bundle that contains deluxe travel sizes of their three best-selling formulas, the Awaken Arousal Oil, the Sex Oil, and two Intimacy Melts to enhance pleasure. I can read insanely glowing reviews from Foria's website all day, and I would recommend you just check them out. They speak for themselves, but you really just have to try their formulas for yourself to really understand. And I highly, highly recommend that you do. The good news is that Foria is offering a special deal for the Art of Being Well listeners. You can get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/WillCole or use code WillCole at checkout. That's foriawellness.com/WillCole. That's foriawellness.com/WillCole for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their Awaken Arousal Oil and their Sex Oil. You'll thank me later.
So you mentioned being at this point where you knew in and of your own willpower not being able to do that, which maybe to someone who doesn't know about addiction or how the 12-step program works, that seems kind of it's countercultural in many ways to our culture. No, it's a willpower thing. You just have to do it. So can you explain that? And I know so much of this, the traditional 12-step program has to do with the higher power. And you mentioned the spirituality. Did you have a spiritual background to begin with, or was that sort of the awakening that this is the path to overcoming this?
I would say prior to that surrender experience when I got sober, I could have been classified as an atheist. No, not atheist, agnostic. I wasn't like in denial that there was a God. I just wasn't really interested and had no reason to be.
Yeah.
But toward the end, so I didn't grow up with religion or anything like that. However, there were what I see now as karmic touch points throughout my life where I had glimpses that there was something there. The first one being when I was around 8 years old, my mom, who was born and raised in Berkeley and pretty progressive in her thinking, took me to an ashram in Oakland to what's called a darshan, like a spiritual gathering for a swami there named Muktananda from India. And he's quite well known in those circles. And I remember as a kid, I really enjoyed that. And there was something there, you know, that really got my attention. I mean, even as an adult, I've asked my mom about it because, you know, now I've read his books and really ventured into a lot of that Eastern mm-hmm. mysticism and whatnot. And she said, yeah, you were just totally enamored with him and the whole experience. And I think now what happened was there was a spiritual energy, a Shaktipat that imprinted me. And there was some sort of ancient memory at 8 years old that was like, huh, bookmark this. We're going to get back to the trauma and soon to the drugs, but there's something here. So there was a little curiosity there. And then in the period when I was addicted to drugs and living in Hollywood and just living a maniacal, self-destructive lifestyle, some members of my dad's side of the family had begun pilgrimages to India to spend time at an ashram of another guru there named Satya Sai Baba. And they would come back with all the accoutrement and the beads and the photos and the vibhuti ash and all of these fantastic stories of miracles being performed, these siddhis as they're called. And I knew that my two aunts in particular, I knew that they were A, not dishonest people, and that they were also sane. And so when they would come back with these stories, I remember just being really intrigued by sort of this supernatural phenomenon that they would experience there. And so they brought me back a couple books and they would sit on the coffee table next to there when, you know, I mean, really, and I'd have it there and I'm like, there's something there. I just intuitively knew there's something there. And, you know, I don't know that I don't think I ever tried to meditate or do yoga, but I was just kind of having this very subtle draw to that kind of, that lineage of teaching, specifically the Indian folks. And shortly before I got sober, you know, so I had never, as I said, been to church or prayed or had any kind of spiritual leanings. But at one point I was so desperate. And I remember I went to my mom's over a Christmas break, probably around 1996. And I had been strung out on heroin, which for anyone who's experienced that is no party. And when you try to quit, it gets dark. You know, it's just, I would not advise it. But I wanted to, speaking of, you know, willpower, I was like, I'm going to go up to my mom's. And I pretended like I had the flu because the symptoms of opiate withdrawal are very similar to the flu in conjunction with the most suicidal depression you've ever experienced at the same time. And she knew that it wasn't the flu and just kind of played along. But I remember there was one point I had a picture of this Indian guru in a little book, and I brought that with me. And I sat in the room next to what would have been my bedroom, and I started praying to this saint, you know, and just saying like, you got to get me out of here. I can't do this anymore. I can't help myself. And I prayed to that, you know, that guru, and then went home and immediately got back on drugs. But shortly after that, did reach a point where my own willpower was totally useless. And then I made the call and I had myself checked into rehab. And at that point, the only option I was given for relief, checking into rehab, was to pray. And I was like, well, I did it once and it didn't seem to have worked, you know, at least not immediately.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't give me Dilaudid or anything that would have been, you know, more to my liking. They said, you know, just go to your room and pray for your higher power to relieve your obsession for drugs and alcohol. Yeah. And I was left with no choice. And so I did that. And something, you know, really profound and absolutely miraculous happened, although it was subtle and took me some time to unpack it. And I the first day there, that would have been February 16th, 1997. From that moment on, till this day sitting here with you, I never have ever once had a craving for drugs or alcohol. Wow. And I've never even remotely considered it as an option.
Wow.
That was followed by, you know, 20 years of vigorous work in the 12 steps and by other means and all sorts of spiritual exploration. But, you know, the initial surrender and the what I see now as just a humbling of myself and a teachability and a subjugation of my ego, right? Of just like, I mean, just total defeat as a human, just absolute despair and hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the gift in that being, I was open-minded to consider that there might be something out there that could help me because I was so thoroughly convinced that I could not help myself. And it's not like I hadn't tried. I mean, I tried to quit drugs countless times.
Right.
And balance, you know, doing what I've heard referred to aptly as switching seats in the Titanic, just like, I'm just going to smoke weed or I'm just going to drink beer whatever. And inevitably, time after time, I would end up doing all the things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really a miracle that I actually survived a lot of the experiences and situations that I put myself into.
I've heard people say that phrase, California sober, which I didn't know was a thing. That's what you're saying, right?
It wouldn't have worked for me.
Yeah.
I attempted that because I love smoking weed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't use cannabis now. I take CBD and stuff, but I accidentally, actually, a couple months ago, ate a gummy. Out here in Texas, they have like different rules for THC and CBD and stuff like that. My friend gave me like a, what I thought was a CBD gummy. Has some Delta 8 or 9 thing, or you know, that's legal. And he said, just take a half, you know, you might feel it. And I'm like, I take CBD all the time, no big deal. And I took the whole gummy. It was like 10 in the morning. And within an hour and a half, I was high as shit. I was sitting there trying to do email and stuff. And I just was like, oh, this, I don't like email. I don't feel like working at all. Anyway, long story short, within, you know, a half an hour, I realized what had happened. And wow. I came to my wife and I was like, babe, like, I'm straight journeying right now. Like I am in like a medicine journey, which is a whole other topic because yeah. I have, to great benefit, worked with psychedelics and plant medicines over the past few years in my sobriety. But yeah, so I love smoking weed, which I found out I don't anymore, by the way. That's the point of that story. Yeah. It's like cannabis, we're done. It does not agree with me at all. I felt horrible. But that was the one thing I could never let go of, speaking of California sober. So I yeah. tried that so many times. Like, weed is cool. If I can just smoke weed, I can function and I can ease my pain and I can be in my body and live in the skin that I'm in with some semblance of peace. But every time I attempted to do that, I would end up being unable to resist taking other drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's, for me, the path of complete abstinence from all mind-altering yeah. chemicals was the path that I took for probably 22 years until I eventually was led to work with ayahuasca.
Got it.
A few years back.
Got it. So you were in that moment of surrender. Would you say you found God at that point, someone that was agnostic, but it was like a real knowing at that point? Is that fair to say?
No. You know, I think what I did realize was that, you know, on day 3 through 28 or whatever, holy shit, I'm sober. I don't know that I equated it to that. Mm. I probably at the time equated it to, I'm sequestered at this remote rehab in Northern California. There's no liquor store that I could walk to. I'm really out there in the woods. So I probably would have just chalked it up to that. Well, I've made a decision to be here. I'm not going to leave. They mm-hmm. keep your money if you leave. It was like $10,000, yeah. you know?
Practical stuff.
That my mom thankfully loaned me. But what one thing that was really actually telling when I started going, huh, what's happening here is when my mom came and picked me up, I remember when we got back toward the town, it was in a town called Sebastopol, which incidentally is where I began using drugs at 9 or 10 years old or whatever it was. Wow. So full circle, I'm back in Sebastopol in a rehab, but she picks me up. I made it to 28 days. I'm still sober. I've complied with all suggestions given. And I remember driving down the road and we passed a gas station that also sold alcohol. And I remember having the thought, oh shit, it's the first time I'd seen alcohol in 28 days. And I had gone years without mm-hmm. taking one day off alcohol. I drank every day to being wasted drunk every day. Like I never, ever in my whole life had 2 beers, always hammered from the minute I picked up the first one. Mm-hmm. And I remember having the thought, I could just tell her I have to go to the bathroom right now. I could go in and buy a 40 ounce or go in the bathroom and chug it. And it was just like that muscle memory of like, that's what I would have done in the past, right? Is just find a way to get comfortable because it's just so uncomfortable being me because of all that unprocessed pain. And so it was a fleeting thought, just a second, you know, yeah. and I looked at it and I was like, no desire, nothing. Even if I had been alone anywhere, you know, just no. And that, I think that was the first clue that, huh, something has definitely happened. I don't know that I directly correlated it to me getting on my knees and praying, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just like, what, that did it? It was still hard to believe. But what's really interesting to me to this day is to not dismiss that act of prayer that day. Something happened. And so the interest and the intrigue of my life is like that thing that happened, whatever did that, what if I had more of that? What if I could avail more of my will, frankly, to that intelligence, to that love mm-hmm. that we call divinity or God or source, whatever label one wants to attribute to that force, that energy. And so it's been over the years so motivating, you know, as that one touch point, I have that one anchor. I was doing a thing, then I did this one thing, and everything changed forever. You know, there's a lot of work on the backside yeah. of that, of course. I'm not just saying, oh, I prayed once and I was cured. I mean, I really was very committed to my recovery.
But you felt a shift.
Yeah.
Noticeable
yeah.
shift.
And so to me, it was so beautiful to have that very clear undeniable change in my experience, because now over the years, as I've been accustomed to applying that same level of open-mindedness and willingness and humility to other troubles in my life, right? It's like relationship problems, career problems, taxes, COVID, whatever, you know, anything in my life that I'm meeting with resistance, anything that I'm finding challenging, anything I'm struggling with. Mm-hmm. And it's funny too, that after all these years of living what I consider to be a pretty damn committed life spiritually. I mean, I'm really a devout person, not to a religion, but just to divinity itself and all of its expressions. I still, to this day, sometimes try to solve my own problems using my intellect or the sheer force of my will, yeah. You know, and it brings me back to that moment. It's like, Luke, well, man, nothing could have touched your problem at that point except a power greater than yourself. And part of it's the internal power, because we're part of God. You know, I don't believe that God's out there in the clouds and I'm over here this lonely, lost soul that's separate from that. It's more about identifying and acknowledging that I'm just, as a person called Luke Story in this lifetime, an expression of consciousness or an expression of God. So it's more about just remembering who I am.
Right, connecting. Right?
And not using the small self, the limited self, to butt up against the difficulties that we all face in life, right? So that moment is always the touch point for me. It's like, no, this thing works, whether you call it prayer or whatever one's relationship to divinity is, mm-hmm. the acknowledgement of it and the submitting to it, not as a punishing God, but submitting to it as the ultimate force of love. But that's the secret to my whole life, you know? Yeah. And so that was really the beginning of it. And then, so that was the first clue. And after that clue revealed itself in that miraculous and totally unexpected sobriety, you know, my liberation from the bondage of addiction.
Wow.
It's just like, God, what else is there to do in life?
Yeah.
If something can do that, I have to pursue that. And I have to get to know that as a working part of my life, not even a compartmentalized, like, oh, I'm going to go do the spiritual thing over here, or do the God thing, or the church thing, or the ashram thing. But what if my actual life could become a prayer?
Yes.
What if I could become so devotional that having a conversation with you is an expression of my prayer? It's my prayer to you. It's my prayer to myself. It's my prayer to anyone listening.
Yeah.
You know, to really broaden my context of what it means to live a spiritual life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like making your life a prayer, making your life a meditation. Or you and I we're just meeting for the first time today, but I live my life the same way. Like every interaction I have with a patient is like this sacred opportunity, right? To like hold space for somebody and like just, and have that moment, which is a sacred thing. And you can make the mundane magical. And people just, so many of us, like I'm constantly rooting myself, but so many of us squander so many beautiful, magical moments that, in my opinion, God gives us and works through us.
Yeah, and you know what keeps it fun for me, Will, is that I often forget.
And that's okay too, right?
Yeah, it's like and so there's an element of just humor in it for me, because even so many touch points of proof, you know, of just, okay, there's a thing. And when I align with it,
there's synchronicity. Life gets,
there's magic, there's synchronicity, problems dissolve. They're truly miraculous experiences ongoing throughout my life, you know, the more committed that I've been to the path. Yet, you know, the inertia of my perceived free will, you know, just living a life, especially a life that was like so deeply embedded in survival for so long. Mm-hmm. There are still times when I just totally forget and I find myself having an interaction and I'm not present, or mm-hmm. I'm trying to solve one of my own problems with my own limited resources or whatever the case may be. And to me, that's the thing that keeps it fun. Yeah. And that's the thing that keeps me, hopefully keeps me humble.
Yeah.
You know, that's
you're
like,
not,
wow.
You're not some elevated being, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I've had, especially in the realm of psychedelics, I mean, I've had non-dual experiences and just truly supernatural, not a belief, but a faithful experience of God that's absolutely undeniable. And I've experienced in those moments that, oh my God, I'm going to be changed forever. I'm always going to be just like this, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, whatever the peak experience is, whether it's been with psychedelics or meditation or breathwork or whatever. And then that peak experience subsides and one realizes, well, I'm still a guy in a body with a wife and a house and a job. And you know, I'm here for a reason. So I don't have to have the expectation on myself that I become an exalted spiritual master or enlightened being, right? It's the householder approach where hopefully over time, like I can remain connected to that part of myself, but also still operate here in the human realm and not find fault with the fact that I'm here or that I'm still very human and I have so many imperfections yet. And really just loving on those imperfections and loving on the mistakes and loving on the ways in which I still think in a limited capacity or ways in which I'm emotionally immature or grandiose or whatever, right? Like name a character flaw, like, wow, how beautiful that I still have all of that. Yet at the same time, I also have a very tactile, tangible, real relationship with God.
Yeah. So it's the human and the being.
Yeah. That's a fun life.
Yeah, it is a fun life.
You know, it's like acknowledging and exploring the mystical and finding ways to integrate. I think that's the word I'm looking for, integration. Yes. Finding ways to integrate that into walking the dog.
Yeah.
Filling up the car with gas.
Yeah.
Recording a podcast. You know, just keeping it real.
Yeah.
Keeping it real, being down to earth, but also knowing that like, within the being down to earth, there's magic in every moment.
Yeah.
If I can remain present to it.
Something that I take every day in between consulting patients here at the Telehealth Center is AG1. It's the daily foundational nutrition supplement that supports whole body health. AG1 is raising the standard for quality in the supplement category. AG1 helps you build your health foundation first. Through a science-driven formulation of vitamins, probiotics, whole food-sourced nutrients, AG1 delivers comprehensive support for the brain, your gut health, and your immune system and energy levels. If I had to describe it in one way, I think of it, it's a multivitamin, multi-mineral, a green superfood or probiotic, so it's gut health support, has an adaptogen blend in it, has a functional mushroom blend in it, so many things all in one serving of AG1. Since 2010, they've actually improved their formula 52 times in the pursuit of making the best foundational nutrition supplement possible through high quality ingredients and rigorous standards. With just one scoop, you're getting all those nutrients and gut health support that helps your whole body thrive and cover your nutritional bases. Look, I look at labs for a living. I see nutrient deficiencies all the time, and you're filling in the gaps with the most common nutritional deficiency gaps when you with just one scoop, one serving of AG1. I like that AG1 is delivered monthly, so I don't have to think about it. It just comes right to my door. I also love, love, love the AG1 travel packs. When I'm traveling for work, however many days that I'm gone, I'll put X amount of AG1 travel packs in my carry-on so I never miss a day. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D. It's a vitamin D3 K2 blend from AG1, and also 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/WillCole. That's drinkag1, DRINKAG, and then the number 1.com/WillCole. drinkag1.com/WillCole. Check it out. I have fallen in love with this new protein powder. You have to check this out. Usually I find that protein powders, and I've drank protein powders since I was a teenager. A lot of them, they have this chalky aftertaste or the ingredients aren't good. But this protein powder from Clean Simple Eats, this is a game changer. It's so different. It's so creamy. It's so smooth with absolutely zero chalkiness. I have it every day. And the one I love the most is their vanilla one, but their Simply Vanilla one. It tastes so good. And here is my very simple, not fancy at all, recipe to use the Clean Simple Eats. I use their Simply Vanilla protein powder and I add some peanut butter because you know your boy loves some
Valencia organic peanut butter from Costco. And I put some almond milk, some ice. That's it. I blend it up. Sometimes I put in some avocado, an avocado, like a half of an avocado. Blend it up. It's the creamiest peanut butter vanilla smoothie. Honestly, the Simply Vanilla is great by itself. But if I have any excuse to add peanut butter to something, I will do it. They have over 22 delicious all-natural flavors like the one that I love, the Simply Vanilla. But you can try 10 different kinds with their protein variety pack. It's only $18 with the code that I'm going to give you. What I love most, beyond the amazing taste, is you can get 20 grams of grass-fed whey protein in each serving. The whey is also cold processed from start to finish, keeping all the nutrients intact. And this formula also contains digestive enzymes to help break down the protein into usable amino acids. And it's really great from a digestive and gut health supporting standpoint. One of the things I love about Clean Simple Eats is their high ingredient standards. Their protein powder is non-GMO, it's gluten-free, it's third-party tested, always grass-fed, and made with zero artificial ingredients. Visit cleansimpleeats.com. Use code WILLCOOL at checkout for 20% off your first order. That's 20% off your first order at cleansimpleeats.com.
What do you say to somebody that's they're hearing us talk about God and spirituality, and there's a lot of baggage and stigma around that. And they think, wow, I thought I was listening to a wellness podcast. Yeah, I thought I was learning from a functional medicine doctor. And I don't know if you could talk about, like, there's research around things we're talking about too and how it impacts people's health quality, right? People tend to live longer, healthier lives when they tap into this. What do you say to the skeptic out there that's like, I'm fine with, that's not a thing for me. Like, I'll take the supplements, I'll do the biohacks, I'll eat the certain way, I'll work out, but this spirituality stuff's not for me.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think in my particular case, I was fortunate because I was really, I had painted myself into a corner. I mean, I didn't want to become a spiritual person. I want to do drugs and be a rock star and have sex with a lot of women. I mean, those were my life goals, you know, at that stage of my life. So it wasn't something that I chose or aspired to being. And, you know, I would say had a fairly strong aversion to, I mean, especially Orthodox religion and the approach to God that requires an intermediary of another person telling me how to do it kind of thing, you know? So I was fortunate in that, like, I was really left with no other options, you know? So I would say if someone is like experiencing an aversion to the things that I'm talking about, I don't think that everyone needs to be spiritual, right? It's a calling. It's something where you feel a certain level of even just mild dissatisfaction with your life. Your life is lacking a sense of purpose and meaning, and you feel that your existence is somehow finite and that kind of the material world is all there is to it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I personally believe that eventually, because I'm quite certain that reincarnation is a thing of reality, that we're given the opportunity to have free will. And it's like, oh God, how do I say this in a way that's not too esoteric and far out? I don't know. There's no other way to say it. My experience is that consciousness, okay, just remove the word God, consciousness itself is an infinite source of life and energy. But because there's really only one thing, which is consciousness, that's all any of this is, right? Beyond our senses, within our senses, consciousness, God, seeks to express itself so it can know itself.
Yeah.
It's like, if there was nothing but you, you wouldn't know there was a you, because all there is you. Okay, so I'm probably going to lose a few people here. And maybe some people are going like, yeah, duh, we know non-duality, okay? So whether or not as a single expression or a single focal point of consciousness as God, as me as a person, whether or not I seek to go back to my source doesn't matter to the source. Because eventually, no matter how, say it's like a tapestry, right, of consciousness, and I'm one little thread in one lifetime, it's up to me when and if I return back to that source. And so we each have that gift of free will. But I think the game here of being born into a human body onto planet Earth is that we're given hints and seeds and some inkling of attraction that guides us back to from where we came, which mm-hmm. is the source of consciousness, the source of life itself, or God. To me, that is a very curious idea. I'm just wired that way, right? But mm-hmm. I had to become wired that way because my finite materialistic view of the world, of living really like an animal, just in survival mode and just living in a world of competition and scarcity yeah. in a much lower state of consciousness, like that wouldn't have been interesting to me. But for people listening that are like, oh, a few of those points are interesting, but I'm meeting this resistance because I had a negative experience in Catholic school, or, you know, my parents hit me over the head with the Bible or whatever, right? Yeah. They wanted me to become a rabbi and I didn't want that. So I became a punk rocker or lesbian or whatever, you know, it's like, I get that. But what I would encourage, and I really don't care who believes in God or not, it's none of my business, but I would encourage finding miracles in your life that are outside of your influence. And one of those, to me, that's always a great touch point is just observe the phenomenon of going to sleep every night. And notice that there's something that's making your heart beat. You know, mm-hmm. to me, that's fascinating. What is that? Mm-hmm. Why don't you just die when you lay down and fall? Like, why am I not dead the next morning?
Yeah, right.
What's doing that, yeah. right? What, you go out and you plant an acorn and in 50 years you have this massive oak tree. Out of what? Where did that come from? Yeah. What is the manifest?
Yeah.
Right? If we're all like very, we easily believe in the manifest, right? In the material world. We see it, oh yeah, it's there. Now it's a tree. Yeah, my heart's beating. Yeah, but why? What's behind yeah. that? What's the unmanifest behind the manifest? Like yeah. what's the wave prior to the particle? I mean, if people are scientifically minded, like, man, come at it from quantum physics.
Well, that's what I was gonna, so what's, much of what you're
what's
saying.
What's the field, right? Yeah. Like, okay, we see the particle coming out of the field. What's the field itself?
Yeah.
And who's running it? Where does that energy come from?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, as you were talking about the sort of concept of non-duality and dimensions, it's so much of it's being pointed to in quantum physics, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like people are being, I feel like science is catching up with antiquity in many ways, like
yeah, right.
Like we didn't, but these. Can you talk about sort of the? We hear the phrase yogic science and the science of Kundalini. There's an ancient science or art to a lot of these Eastern mystical practices. Can you talk a little bit about people? Because I know that's part of your.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: is it's fundamentally understood by both nonlinear and linear predominant people that everything is energy, right? Everything is energy. And so over the course of time, and I, you know, I'm no historical scholar on all of the ancient practices and, you know, philosophies and whatnot, but one thing that I found fundamentally universal is that no matter what sort of system you're looking at, from whatever continent, whatever indigenous peoples that have developed systems around communing with God, they fundamentally and universally are built around the fundamental principle that there is this source of energy there that's available to us, this life force, this prana, this chi, and that there are things that you can do through your thoughts, through your feelings, or with your physical body that can help facilitate that energy into your life in tangible ways. And an easy way to see this, I mean, now breath work is ubiquitous and thank God for that. There's a great app, by the way, for anyone listening that's kind of breath work curious. It's called Othership. I use it almost every day. It's just amazing because breath work is one of those things. It's like, oh, I'm going to do it today. And it's like, well, kind of like working out. I mean, it's not called breath work for nothing. And I practiced Kundalini yoga for a number of years and did teacher training, probably 8 years or something. And I would have these, I mean, these transcendent experiences and sometimes quite psychedelic experiences.
Yeah, the holotropic breath work.
Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, having spontaneous trauma healing, just crying or just hysterical laughter. I mean, really altered states of consciousness. And, you know, now you don't have to go wear a white turban and, you know, join a Kundalini yoga sect in order to experience this. But it's very obvious and very tangible that if you breathe in certain ways and move your body in certain ways and you adhere to these practices, no matter what lineage mm-hmm. they are derived from, that you will have a physiological and emotional and a mental change that is predominantly positive. Mm-hmm. And applying those practices to one's life with some degree of consistency over a period of time will change the way you think, feel, and act.
Yeah.
Right? And then coupling that with some sort of philosophical framework that makes it all make sense.
Yeah.
For me, the teachings from the East and the teachings around non-duality, the Vedic sort of perspective, has just always been where I resonate. But mm-hmm. I also have many friends for whom they derive the same message from the Bible or the Torah. It's all the same message. It's just like, what's your flavor, you know? And also, yeah. I think there's a certain karmic hereditary element too. Like my wife, she's not interested in India stuff at all. She's interested in shamanism. She identifies with Native American traditions, with South American traditions, with Russian shamanism. I mean, you know,
yeah.
And I like that, but it's not the thing that pulled me.
Yeah.
And I think it has something to do with, I mean, I've had sort of visions around this. I think I've lived a lot of lifetimes. I don't think. I know that mm-hmm. I've lived a lot of lifetimes in India. And that's my mother, my home. I've been there. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, I was like, oh yeah, I know this place, right? Mm-hmm. I don't get that if I go to Brazil or Peru or yeah. wherever, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's fun to kind of, it's like the word I'm looking for is charm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a subtle charm because you can pick any of these systems of philosophy, these yeah. practices, and one's going to resonate with me and not the next person. It's like, where's that hint of charm? That's just kind of like, huh, I think I want to go to that meditation class because that one teacher just, there's a feeling about them. There's, mm-hmm. there's something in the way they present this information, this universal mm-hmm. set of spiritual laws or principles. And I think there's a lot of validity in that. And to not try to force oneself in a box because that's what everyone else is doing or whatever. But even if you don't want to associate with any sort of philosophical framework or tradition, any kind of meditation, even if you just make it up, any kind of breathwork meditation, mm-hmm. anything that is intentionally devotional
yeah.
is going to produce the desired effect
yeah.
with some consistency and some level of commitment.
And when you look at the research too, even if, like you said, even the practice itself, even if you're not ready for the philosophy around it, the research around somatic experiences, somatic practices, which is what breath work is, which is what yoga really is. Studies have shown that really is supportive of metabolizing trauma and regulating the nervous system and supporting lowered inflammation levels, better brain health, better hormonal health. So I'm fascinated to you saying that, and more people I talk to, and I feel the same way, the sort of esoteric connection, whether it's the Vedic tradition or your wife, it's the shamanic tradition. Can you kind of explain more for people that are newer to that, the interconnectedness between all these different faith traditions, I guess is one way of saying it, but really they're all reflecting light in their own way, but they're all part of the same diamond.
Yeah.
It's something
that's a great way to put it.
It's like a deep, to me, it's like what the difference is between what we're talking about here and religion. It's like faith is fine, has a lot of benefits to it, but there's a difference between faith and belief and knowing and experience.
Yeah,
and I think that's the gap that a lot of people are in. They're in just in the psychological, they're just in the theological, they're just in the mind, which is like my belief is right, your belief is not, versus sort of a deeper, I think, beneath the outer clothing that I think a lot of people within each of these faiths around the world have all talked about.
Well, there's a couple really interesting points in there. The first one being, from my perspective, and why I think, you know, I gravitate toward certain teachings more so than others, but I also see value in just about any valid mm-hmm. Framework of understanding. Mm-hmm. And that's that there are universal truths that are infinite, that are timeless, mm-hmm. the principles, right? They're a truth that has always been true, that will always be true. And so an easy, accessible one would be the principle of love, right? Love is always good, right? Expressing and experiencing love is always positively beneficial, right? Mm-hmm. And so you could say from a Christian tradition, you know, to me, and we got an expert over here, you know, in the realm of Jesus, but from my understanding, it has a lot to do with unconditional love. It's the expression mm-hmm. of love, right? And maybe in Buddhism, it's not expressed in the same way, but there's still an underlying fundamental principle. And I think I was fortunate in that my real entryway into exploring spirituality was through the 12 steps. And brilliantly, the 12 steps introduce spirituality in a non-fundamental way. I mean, it has its roots in Christianity, mm-hmm. but in the 12 steps, it's made clear that the whole purpose of that teaching itself is to A, help an alcoholic to achieve sobriety, and B, to have a spiritual experience. And the spiritual experience is actually what allows the sobriety to take place. Mm. But it's based on universal fundamental truths that could apply to really any religion or any like valid spiritual teaching. So love would be one, being of service to others, taking a moral inventory of oneself, being honest with oneself, really looking at who and what you are, mm-hmm. being willing to let go of character flaws that are deleterious to your life or the lives of those with whom you interact, making amends when you've harmed someone, not just saying sorry, but really correcting your errors as mm-hmm. you go after that inventory.
Yeah.
The application of prayer, the application of meditation, a willingness to evolve, an open-mindedness, a humility. These are all the fundamental principles of the right. 12 steps, which are also the fundamental principles of most spiritual teachings and even at the core of most religions. If you can kind of get through all of the metaphorical content and the historical content, yeah. right? What we're really dealing with are core principles. And what I think is really amazing is that without adopting any sort of belief system, and I'll get to the belief versus faith thing, without adopting any theological belief system, if anyone just gets a basic understanding of what those principles are, how to spell them, the definition of each one. I mean, literally, I used to study these words in the dictionary, like willingness, what even is that? Humility, what? You know? And I would study and study and study. I mean, just those words, those principles, just to get an understanding of them, not so that I could have an intellectual prowess over my vocabulary, but I felt, and it proved itself to be true, that if I had an intellectual understanding of what those core, universal, fundamental laws or truths are, then I would have a much better chance of actually applying them to my life. What's really cool is that without adopting any belief system, if any human being learns these fundamental principles from whatever lineage they choose and actually applies them and integrates them into their persona, into their mindset, into their emotional body, and even in some cases, physical body, what happens is a change in your character is produced. That's the result. You start to change. You become less selfish and more giving. You become more honest. You become more fair. You become more willing to serve others and not just serve yourself. Those principles, when they're applied, raise your consciousness. That's the most simple way to say it. And back to your earlier question, how does this relate to our health? Higher states of consciousness means a higher state of coherence. And that coherence isn't just in your spirit and your mind. That coherence is relevant to the cells in your body, to your biology. What we're going for is coherence. When we go out of coherence, it's because we've drifted away from the fundamental universal truths that are the fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. And each of those principles is also inherently one aspect of the purity of divinity. It's how God expresses itself in our world mm-hmm. is through truth, unchanging truth, undeniable truth, truth that you can't argue with. Is love a positive attribute? Period. It is.
Yeah.
That's it. End of debate, right?
Yeah.
Is being honest going to have a positive impact on your life? Yeah. If it's tempered, you know, with some kindness, of course. I mean, there's an honesty that could also be harmful if it's not applied with some wisdom. But these truths, that's all you need. And if somebody, I believe, truly wants to be physically healthy, that we have to have some relationship to these truths, because there is so much, there are so many aspects of our life that distract us from that truth. And there's so much illusion. As much truth as there is in our experience, there's an equal part of illusion. There's so many things that we believe, see, feel, think that are actually based in falsehood.
Yeah.
And it's just part of the, it's part of the cosmic joke of being incarnate as a human, right? Mm-hmm. We're so easily misled. And we also are so misguided by the fact that we're in a body that's essentially, well, not essentially, it's an animal, right? I have an animal body. And also the capacity for higher states of consciousness,
yeah,
that are evolved beyond a cow, a dog, a cat. I mean, some would argue with that, right? But we have this animal body that has animal needs.
Yeah.
And then you have this prefrontal cortex strapped on that allows us to make nuclear weapons. You know, so the odds are really stacked against us because of because of the marriage of both of those parts of ourselves. Yeah. We have human needs and instincts, and we're territorial and competitive, and we have this egoic mind that's always trying to help the body survive. You know, so there's this inner battle, but the sword that cuts through all of that falsehood is the sword of truth, and truth is principle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is the touch point, the access point,
yeah,
to God. And with the belief and faith, there were many years where, like, because of those experiences I had that I described earlier, where there was undeniable, irrefutable evidence that something had intervened in my life. So I believed that it existed, but I didn't believe in it. I didn't have a faith that it would deliver, you know, mm-hmm, according to my needs. Right. And so that's an ongoing process. As, yeah, I said, I forget sometimes. I'm trying to figure it out myself. And I go, oh, whoa, hold up. I'm leaving the most important partner out of the equation here. It's my higher power, man. You know, it's called higher for a reason. It's above and beyond. It's part of me, but it's also above and beyond my limited capacity, mm-hmm, as a person, as a man. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I have power. I can move mountains. We all can. But the source of that power is not solely derived from me.
Yeah.
And then my access to that power, in my experience, is solely possible and so simply possible. It's so simple, mm-hmm, is through those principles, through adhering to those principles as best I can. As imperfectly as I do it, it works. And mm-hmm, so that's what I begin to have a faith in. So I don't have to believe in a God or a system or a book or anything. Yeah. It's that I'm beginning over time more and more to trust that there's a relationship there.
Yes.
And it's a reciprocal relationship where divinity and I serve one another. And the more that I align to that, I find that, you know, that the highest good, not only for me, but the highest good for all is served. And that's kind of my guiding principle, really, is, mm-hmm, in any decision, does this serve the highest good for totality?
Yeah.
Right. Not just, hey, is this the way I'm going to get the biggest check or get what I want? Or am I going to subjugate myself and like people please and make sure Will gets what he wants, but then I suffer? Like, mm-hmm, what's the highest minded choice that one can make in any given moment? And that's a really good barometer of making a decision. Mm-hmm. Do I feel intuitively this decision, this thought, this feeling, this act serves the highest good for all life?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think you really brought a nuance that I think is important to say, is that belief and faith for anybody in the early stages is a good starting point. It's a window into a pointer, if you will, a pointer into actions that will bring alignment into your life. But at a certain point, the Bible makes it, I've in this analogy too, it's like the sort of the exoteric teachings of many faiths are like bread and milk, I think, is the food analogies they made, like basically baby food. But ultimately, as someone's faith and knowingness grows, it ends up being this sort of meat. And I think that's what where you're at now, and where people, I think of anybody, I think that our full wellness will be expressed whenever you get to that meat.
Yeah. And you know, it's also, I think, kind of a fool's errand to try to have a holistic experience of health,
mm-hmm,
by just addressing the physical part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important part, but like you talk about in medicine, that we would be best served by maturing out of this mechanistic sort of approach to health. Oh, I need, mm-hmm, to just fix my gut, or I just need to go to a therapist and deal with my trauma, or, mm-hmm, whatever, right? We were talking about dental work earlier. It's like, oh, if I just fix my teeth, then everything would cascade down from that, which is partly true. But we're physical beings, but we're also spiritual beings. And, mm-hmm, and you don't have to, you know, buy into any sort of religion or belief in God or any theology to know that. I mean, it's just common sense.
Yeah.
If one can disarm themselves from their intellectual pride for a moment and just go, wow, man, like,
yeah,
look at this body I'm in. Something's running this, yeah, and it's more than just me. Yeah. I mean, it's the other day, man, this never fails to amaze me. And I don't know why it still amazes me. I thought of someone randomly that I rarely talk to. I was just like, oh, I wonder what, you know, I just kind of daydreamed about this person. Boom, text me. I mean, this stuff is happening outside of our awareness constantly. The synchronicity, the interconnectedness,
yes,
that's so far outside of our limited sense-based perspective.
Yeah.
So if we can not come to our senses, actually come expand our senses, right? Yeah. And open up these different parts of ourself and become more fully integrated, you know? And 100%. it's all part of the same goal.
Yeah.
Which is just becoming whole. And what are we all looking for? We're looking for a sense of certainty. We're looking for a sense of safety. We want to know that we're okay. We want to know that those we love are okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that can be achieved solely on the physical plane because there are too many variables.
Yeah.
And when we don't have the understanding of the interconnectedness of it all, it's all too variable, right? It just gets too scary. When you start to see, especially, you know, you've been around for a few years, you see, say you go through, you know, a tragedy, right? And it seems like just the end of your life, it's the worst thing that could ever possibly happen. You lost the job, the divorce, whatever, right? An illness even. And then if you are so inclined, you use that as an opportunity to grow and to evolve. And then some time goes by and you look back at that juncture in your life and you go, oh, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, being a drug addict was by far the best thing that ever happened to me. And also the worst thing at the same time because of the suffering that involved.
Yeah.
But the fruit that came from that experience and my dedication to, you know, what I'm continuing to learn and then share with people like you and your audience is like, oh man, it was all worth it. It was all grist for the mill, as Ram Dass likes to say.
Well, it's like that spiritual principle, that universal principle, of out of the greatest darkness has the potential for the greatest light. And I think you're living proof of that. Like you're just emanating sort of this knowingness of this divine that you mentioned. The synchronicities, every day I see synchronicities, the smallest things, like there'll be patients on the schedule and they'll be people with the same birthday, three patients in a row, all scheduled separately. I could not pay attention to that. I just could go and be about my day. But to me, they're small little, I call it God art. It's like little seams in the tapestry of life that, and maybe it's meaningless to most people, but for me, this whole synchronicity of it, and there's obviously bigger examples than that, but just it's there for all of us to see, right? And not just synchronicities, but like you said, nature, seeing sunsets and seeing that God art or feeling your heartbeat. I think these are glimpses of God's handiwork.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's like we're put here as blind children. You know, it's like our job here is to learn how to see, and we all have our own unique way of arriving at that. And many of us don't. I mean, I know people that live God knows how many lifetimes and they never have any inkling to learn how to see. And there are those of us, maybe people listening or people like you and me, they're like, no, I want to know. How does this work? What's going on here?
Yeah.
What's this all about? It's just ever fascinating. And I think that childlike curiosity, I mean, this is one of my most cherished attributes. It's just, man, I want to know all the truth there is to know, but not know it so that I have an intellectual construct that I can then egoically pontificate on, but I want to know it as in I want to experience it.
Yes.
I want to have the most rich and full experience that I possibly can while I'm here. And that does require some inquiry, some practice in order to bring that about.
Yeah. Absolutely. My friend, this has been a rich conversation. As you know, the podcast is called The Art of Being Well. So I'm going to throw a few different, I want to pick your brain about different facets of wellness. First question is, what's the worst tasting healthy food that you still eat, but it tastes freaking disgusting?
Easy. Grass-fed, raw beef liver.
So you do it raw?
Yeah.
How are you doing it?
Well, I buy it at the farmer's market. Shout out to Richardson's Farms, regenerative, you know, organic operation. They sell it, you know, you get a pound and they slice it up and then it's frozen. And so I'll defrost it. And it's, I don't know how to describe it, kind of like yeah, it looks like a piece of ham you'd put in a ham sandwich or something, like sliced thin like that. And then I dice it up when it's still frozen. It cuts very easily because I used to get like the big thick ones and mm-hmm. no knife is sharp enough, by the way, yeah. to like easily cut through raw liver, at least not my knives. So I dice it up into little cubes and then I kind of fell out of the habit. It's a good reminder because now I'm just taking the desiccated capsules at the moment. But on a good week, I'll chop it into little cubes and then I kind of rotate it. I have my frozen few pounds in the freezer. I take one out, cut it up, then I put it in the refrigerator and then I just pop a few cubes in my mouth and don't breathe. And, you know, wash it down with some raw milk or whatever. And those are like my multivitamins.
Love it.
But every once in a while, I get a whiff of it, right? You know, I breathe and then my taste buds are alerted to what's happening. I only wish, you know, and I guess people living their natural life way would have this experience. I wish I had been acclimated to that strong flavor when I was a baby. Because I have friends that feed their baby stuff like that and they love it.
Yeah. Me too.
They'll just sit there and chew on raw liver. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But just because they haven't learned that, ew, it's gross.
Yeah.
You know,
and we've been tainted by modern.
Yeah. Growing up on, you know, Captain Crunch or whatever. Pop Tarts.
Frosted Flakes.
Yeah. Hot Pockets out of the microwave, you know. So, of course, liver tastes gross. But yeah, that would be, I think, probably the most nutritious food that I take and also the one that is the least pleasant.
Got it. So, what are three. Let's do. I know you take a lot. What are your three, if you had to say, most influential, beneficial supplements that you take right now?
I would say magnesium and K2. And well, three is tough. I recently made a top 10 video and I couldn't even do it. I had like five honorable mentions and it went up to 15. You know, I'd say, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about the things that are difficult to get from food that are really critical to your health. I mean, I guess if you ate a lot of natto, you could get your K2, but that's talk about another food that's difficult to eat but really good for you.
Yeah,
magnesium, K2. Man, I might have to say the Rosita cod liver oil.
Yeah, it's like
the retinol thing. I mean, you can get some of it from liver, depending on what your cows ate and mm-hmm. all that, you know. But man, if you like put me on a deserted island, those would probably be my three.
Love it.
And then after we're done, I'll be like, no, number three was actually this. But and I don't take the cod liver oil every day, but definitely K2 and magnesium. I'm on the daily.
What's the weirdest supplement that you take that you'd be like most out of the box surprising?
Oh my God. Well, depends if we're talking about past or current. The weirdest supplement I've ever taken was drinking my own urine called auto urine therapy,
that's a thing.
Again, back in the late 90s or whatever it was.
Was that?
I didn't notice a lot of benefit from it.
Yeah.
But it's truthfully, I mean, it's not something I would do for fun, but it's not as gross as it sounds. It's actually, if anyone's ever had the Quinton sea minerals, that might be my number four supplement. It kind of just tastes like salty water.
Yes. And well, I have put patients on that.
And it's sterile. So, you know, it's not like eating your own poo or something. But I'm thinking about now, I have so many freaking things down there. What is weird? This is such a good question. Man, that is really, really difficult. It's probably there's this company called Wizard Sciences. And it's this guy, Ian Mitchell. I've interviewed him on my podcast, The Lifestylist. Throw that in there a few times. And he makes all of these different serums, generally in an MC, like a C8, MCT, or sometimes olive oil with C60, this carbon 60. And he'll put, I mean, they're not that weird, but they're so effective and so awesome just for energy, essentially, and brain health. And he'll put other things in there like PQQ and mm-hmm. he just kind of makes these like magic potions. And those ones are pretty trippy, especially the carbon 60, because it's just such a unique substance and it has so many different uses. And I think like the most novel, it's not that out there, but it's pretty cool what he's come up with. The combination of those things.
Yeah. I love that. I have to check it out.
Yeah.
What's your, I know you do lots of biohacks, quote unquote, different other wellness tools. This is going to be hard for you. What are your three favorite biohacks?
Yeah, we could do a tour of the house, dude. There's like 50 freaking
things
in here.
We'll have you back. We'll do a part two.
No, you know, for sure, ice baths. I mean, that's every day, non-negotiable. When I travel, I don't always do this, but when I have the gumption to do so, I'll even check in my room, unpack my bags, and I take my carry-on to the ice machine and fill it up with ice and I'll do an ice bath. I mean, I'm like obsessed. I have a Morosco Forge ice bath in the backyard. In the summer here in Austin, I'm doing three or four a day. It's just so freaking hot here. But I think for mood, I mean, obviously there's all the health benefits, inflammation, et cetera, but there's nothing that puts me in a better mood instantly than an ice bath. And also just learning how to regulate my nervous system, getting in really uncomfortable water and just seeing how fast I can totally surrender and relax to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's over the years, I've been doing it for so many years, probably the one thing that's given me the most resilience to stress. Mm. You know, someone almost hits you in your car, or you open a letter from the IRS that has a scary number on it, that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. The wife says, hey, we need to talk, you know, those type of things. It's just being able to breathe. It's like, I just go back to the ice. The cold is such a beautiful teacher. So that's one. And then the infrared sauna. I have two of them. I'm actually getting a third one too, a barrel sauna, because I got to have one for the homies in the backyard. It's a different kind of heat. I'm a freak for saunas, but I've been doing the infrared saunas for, God, 25, no, probably more, wherever they came out. It might even be 30 years. So I have a one over there that I don't use as much because it takes longer to heat up and I just want to get in. Downstairs, I have one called a sauna space.
Maybe, I love sauna space.
Yeah, good. My friend Brian Richards designed those, and they have incandescent red bulbs. And I got... They usually come with just four bulbs, but I had an extra set of four. So I have the eight bulbs in there now. And that thing just smokes you. I mean, you don't even have to preheat it, but I still do. And I get in there and it's just, I am sweltering, just pouring sweat in the first 2 minutes. And I really like that because it also has the mitochondrial benefit of the red light.
Red light, yeah.
And that red light really penetrates deeply with those incandescent bulbs. So I would be remiss. I don't think I could live without that thing, honestly. The ice bath, that sauna. Third one, I would say, oh man, it's kind of like what's top of mind. You know, I go through little phases. You know what I'm actually really digging right now is this thing. Have you ever tried the Lucia light?
No.
Oh, it's a hypnagogic light. It's around the corner over there. I did one this morning. I like to do, essentially, it was designed by these Austrian. One of them is a neuroscientist and the other one's a psychotherapist. And they programmed this device that you lie under and... They programmed all these various frequencies of flashing lights, essentially. Mm-hmm. And these lights, I don't know what exactly they're doing to your brain waves, but I'm going to assume that you're probably producing a lot of gamma. I mean, definitely you're going into alpha. I mean, your brain is just lit up. And so you lay under that thing for 20 or 30 minutes. There's all these different programs. And you do it with your eyes closed. Mm-hmm. And I typically will do my breath work or some kind of meditation under that thing. And when you look at it from afar, it's just a bunch of like white flashing light. Mm-hmm. But when you lie under it, you have a full psychedelic, fractal, geometric experience. And so that's probably my favorite way to just induce a quick state change because it takes you really into... the field of consciousness, into the quantum. You know, it's like it's so reliably just takes me out of that kind of fast beta brainwave thinking, doing things, what do I got to do, planning, executing. It's like I just go into that thing and it's like I just forget about everything. I forget I'm even in a body. You know, it's a really profound and brief experience, and one that doesn't necessarily require a lot of integration time versus, you know, if you work with psychedelics or something like that, you'd obviously have a much more profound experience than that typically, but it takes time out of your life and the set and setting and the care with which one, well, I would recommend the care with which one proceeds into altering your state in that realm, but it's a similar experience with no risks, right?
Got it.
So I like to kind of stack things with the Lucia light, whether it's a PMF mat or a number of different things, but I'd say the ice bath, the sauna, and that light therapy. And there's even another one called the Neurovisor that is just a wearable that's really cool.
It's have you heard of BrainTap? I feel like it's similar to that.
Yeah, I like BrainTap a lot too. Yeah. I use BrainTap. BrainTap, the lighting part of it is a little less quite a lot less sophisticated, but I like BrainTap in that it has all of these affirmations and it's like a great way to reprogram your mind when it's in a really receptive brainwave state.
Yeah.
So yeah, similar to that. And there have been times where I do BrainTap every morning for months. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm working on a particular thing, there was when I moved in this house, I had to pay for it. So I was using all the, you know, the finance journeys on BrainTap and stuff like that, you know, just getting in an abundance mindset and all of this. And it must have worked because I paid everything off okay, you know? But yeah, I like ways that you can alter your consciousness with little to no risk.
Yeah.
and no side effects. But yeah. I want to like get the big bang, which the Lucia light reliably delivers. Yeah,
I will do that. And I like that these are tools that people can get into. Like we're talking about this sort of other, this higher level of thinking, something greater than yourself. So what book-wise, like if someone that's curious about some of the things you've been talking about, do you have any entry points that people to like learn more about spirituality and learn about the, some of the things you talked about?
Oh yeah. I mean, my all-time favorite teacher, I've gone through different phases with books and teachers and it's been interesting to observe, like we were talking about Eckhart Tolle earlier and there was quite a long period where like I just listened to him all the time and read him all the time. And I just digested it until it became just sort of part of the fabric of my awareness.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, growing out of it isn't really the right term because it's just weird. I outgrew Eckhart Tolle. I mean, his teachings are so profound. I don't know that one could outgrow it.
Yeah.
But I think you have different seasons, right? Where something appeals to you for a period of time. Maybe it was Marianne Williamson or Wayne Dyer or, you know, Ram Dass, Alan Watts, right? All these great teachers and orators. But the one that stuck with me for the longest is a man who's no longer alive called David R. Hawkins, Dr. David R. Hawkins. He's most famous, and this is where I want to recommend the books. He's most famous for a book called Power Versus Force. And that's the first one I read. However, it was, I don't find it to be very approachable, and it's a bit dry. It's just clinical, or it's hard to kind of like sink your teeth into. But he wrote a number of other books which are much more complex and maybe not a great entry point for someone's like, oh, I want to read a spiritual book. But those have been the ones for me that have like just continued to blow my mind. And also listening to his lectures, and I used to go see him speak. And I'll take a break and I'll think, okay, I kind of get his thing. This happens all the time for years. And then I go back and I read or I listen and I'm like, oh my God. You know, I'm just like, holy shit. I hadn't even scratched the surface because his teachings are so profound. And essentially his teachings were based in devotional non-duality, you know, but he was a psychiatrist for 50 years, a brilliant man. So highly intelligent and very intellectual, but also deeply spiritual. And I would say by our metric, an enlightened person, you know? Mm-hmm. So the book that is, I think, the most accessible and maybe the most useful for people to start to explore him would be the one he wrote before he died, which was dramatically more accessible than anything he ever wrote. And it's called Letting Go. I think it's called The Power of Surrender. Hmm. And in that book, there's not so much of the heady, like non-duality deep stuff that he was most known for. It was all about the importance of and the practical application of how to really feel your emotions. And it's all about surrender, and it's the antithesis of spiritual bypassing, right? It's about like facing and feeling. And in that book, relevant to our conversation, he outlines all of the, I think, most important fundamental spiritual principles and dissects each and every one of them and explains what they are and how to apply them to your life. Because he also came originally in part through the movement of the 12 steps. He was, he was friendly with the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson. And so he comes from that kind of perspective and then infuses non-duality. But David Hawkins, Letting Go, I mean, profoundly powerful and really easy to read. And just, I have a hard time picturing anyone reading that and being like, I don't get it. You know, you read it and you're like, oh shit, yep, that's it.
I get it.
He just nailed it. And interestingly enough, it's my theory that he was quite old. I think he was 86 or something when he died. I have a feeling he knew he was going to leave and he wrote that book as a more accessible entry point into his
work. Like if you get nothing else, get this.
Yeah, because he could have written something for his last book that was way more complex and higher level, you know, but he didn't. He wrote that. You almost read it and you're like, did he digress? Because his last four books were way deeper and thick. I mean, I'm talking like long books just in the weeds of non-duality and just profound and potent teachings. And then he was like, all right, here's a simple way to get into it. And that book is really beautiful.
I love it. I always think of Jesus's words. He said, love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. The whole law and prophets hinge on this. Or I think Rabbi Akiva around the same time said the same thing. Love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. All the rest is commentary.
That's so great.
I think it sums up.
We could have just said that in the beginning and had a 3-minute podcast.
Like the rest is like interesting, fascinating, could be glimpses into a deeper knowing, but it's commentary.
That's true.
My friend, where can people go to learn about all the things of your work?
I would say the flagship bit of content in my world is my podcast, The Lifestylist. I'm having a hard time saying S's still because of some dental work. The Lifestylist. And that's been going for 6 years, and I've had all kinds of amazing people like you and Joe Dispenza and all kinds of hot shots in the realm of health and also spirituality and whatnot. So that's just something I'm just continue to amazingly have passion to do. And then my website is lukestory.com, S-T-O-R-E-Y. And my Instagram is kind of my most active social media, and that's at Luke Story.
Are you on TikTok yet?
No, it's funny. I think when it came out, I went to sign up and I couldn't get my name. You know, I was like, I had to do Luke Story 1 or something. I was like, I'm not doing it.
Screw it.
Yeah. And then, there was all this stuff that came out, like it's got spyware and, the Chinese are looking at your, I don't know how much of that's true or whatever, but my wife, Allison, often sends me really wild ass, excerpts from her TikTok. I don't think she uses it, but she just looks at it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interesting people on TikTok. I got to say, if you dive into, there's two areas, into the spirituality, the esoteric, alternative history, conspiracies, flat earth, like there's all kinds of crazy ass, very interesting shit on TikTok. I think they've evaded censorship or something. So I enjoy it as a spectator because the stuff I see there is really wild. And what's interesting about it is very young people talking about Atlantis and just new agey, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And some of it's probably true, some of it's not. But I think it's one of the more interesting social media platforms.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes because...
Are you on there?
I am, but I don't know what the heck I'm doing.
Oh, okay. I think that was the other thing too. I couldn't figure out how to like make content on there.
No.
Same with Instagram Reels. I get so frustrated. Like everyone, you need to do Reels. I'm like, dude, I'm not a film editor. Like, you know what I'm saying? I just pick up my phone. I'm trying to shoot something. But I'm learning. But
this has been great.
You won't find me on TikTok, but definitely on Instagram.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Great conversation.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.